Welcome to Red Meat, the conservative news update you need from Odyssey stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in. The government shutdown is over. But still, air traffic was snarled for all of us. Government workers and air traffic controllers stretched their savings to the limit. SNAP beneficiaries were scared. And what was accomplished? Here's more with Mark Cox.
We could have struck this exact deal 45 days ago. In fact, we met with Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer and said, we will pass this exact deal. They said no. They put the American people through a ton of pain and suffering for nothing.
All right, we've got former Missouri Senator Jim Talent on the line with us this morning. Jim, happy Friday. How are you?
Hey, I'm fine, Mark. Hope you're doing well,
hey,
you and Dan.
Absolutely, absolutely. So yesterday, of course, the shutdown was officially over. They're trying to get air traffic back in order and all that stuff this morning. But what's your takeaway on that? J.D. Vance says, listen, we could have done this 40 days ago. Why did it take so long?
Mark, it was entirely a political exercise. Now, I don't know whether it was a considered one, whether they were looking at numbers, went through options. But the problem with this kind of thing, when they did it to show the Democratic base that they were fighting. Okay. Now, I've been through this. I mean, I was watching this the whole time and really cringing for them on a personal level, because the problem is, when you cave, which you have to do, or you're going to have members starting to cave, which is what happened. Okay, now the base ends up even more angry at you than they were at the beginning, and they're angry now primarily at Senator Schumer. And so you would have thought he would have known this, because you know he's watched it and tried it before, but no, I mean, he obviously didn't.
Just took him 40 days to fold this time. That's all, right? And he'll argue he didn't fold, right?
Well, and we don't know whether he went to these senators and asked them to do this. I kind of think no. Look, Schumer is like most politicians. Let's forget about what he believes for a second, which is all wrong, okay? He has strengths and he has weaknesses, okay? One of his problems is that ever since President Trump became president the first term, Schumer has not exercised his strengths. His strength is like in deal making, but he would never try and do any deals with Trump. And I imagine Trump was initially very surprised at that. Schumer's strength is not throwing red meat out to the base.
Yeah.
Okay. To use a political term, not just a political term. And so he doesn't do it very well. And again, when I watch him try standing at these podiums, trying to gin everybody up, you know, it's cringeworthy. I mean, that's all I can say.
Jim, the next 11 months are going to be interesting to watch as they grapple with what to do with this socialist movement within their party. You've got your centrist, you've got your far left socialist party, and they're right now at major odds. Do you think there'll be a coming together? Is the mainstream Democratic Party going to have to embrace socialism between now and then in order to maintain their seats? Is that the plan, you think? And is that going to sell in America? It's obviously selling in Seattle and Minneapolis and now New York, but will it sell across the country in those bellwether and in those swing states?
Well, it won't sell if that's what they're trying to market. That I feel pretty strongly about. You know, if I based on past experience, I would say Democrats are pretty good at coming together and being tactically pretty wise politically.
Yeah.
But it's difficult to measure, and certainly the Republicans need to plan on that assumption. I mean, you can't plan on the assumption your political opponent's going to hand you elections, right? But they do seem to be so angry now and so enthusiastic about these very, very marginal candidates. I'm talking politically.
Yeah.
And they may be drawing the wrong lesson from Mamdani's win, which I don't even think shows that New York is socialist. I mean, he basically campaigned on promising people a bunch of free stuff. And I think we should remember who he was running against. I mean, Andrew Cuomo was a spent force.
Damaged, yeah. Damaged goods.
Yeah.
Yeah. A different candidate, I think, representing Cuomo's position might have done a lot better.
Yeah, when I thought about that this morning, I found this bite from Ronald Reagan I wanted to play. Hang on.
Capitalism, not socialism, is the most progressive, revolutionary, and powerful economic force for good in the world today. For only where freedom lives is economic growth strong. Does opportunity thrive, and are the forces of human betterment always at work? Socialist countries are held down by a gravity of their own making, and America something like a rocket shooting to the stars.
Yeah, to Reagan's point there, these young people, Jim, this is what I worry about in this next election cycle in the midterms. The same people that turned out and voted for Mamdani go to the polls in droves next year, because they think for some reason this time it'll be different, when they're simply not students of history.
Yeah, in New York City, that may be true. But, I mean, I caution people against, I was talking to some people yesterday about this, against treating young voters like some kind of different species. You know, I mean, the person was saying, well, they don't have any attention span because they're on the Internet. And I know what the psychologists are saying. But I think they're pretty much like everybody else, maybe even more so in the sense that they want and need economic opportunity. And so I think the lesson of this round of elections for Republicans is we need to be talking about the things that the president and the congressional party have already done to get the economy moving. And we need to focus on the economy going forward. And you're already seeing them start to do this, right? I mean, I heard a different clip from the vice president doing exactly that. So I think that's what this is going to be about in the next year or so. And I feel pretty confident for my party if people will message and talk about things that the voters want to hear about, right? Which I think right now is the economy, with a sidelight on immigration and crime.
Yeah, I'm also just dumbfounded by the fact that socialism, which is nowhere even comparable or compatible with a constitutional republic, is gaining this kind of traction. The two cannot coexist within each other because they contradict. One is all about government control. The other is about individual rights. And I just don't understand why Americans who get to celebrate those individual rights each and every day are embracing a government-led everything.
Yeah, because a constitutional republic, I mean, it means it's definitionally a government that is limited, right?
Absolutely.
People have freedom to live their own lives. And with socialism, it's all about the state. I mean, that's what everybody's supposed to put their faith in, is socialism. And as President Reagan was saying there, not only is I think that demeaning to the human spirit, but it doesn't work.
It never has.
Right? Capitalism has lifted billions and billions of people out of poverty, and it was only capitalism. It was only when we were able to lay the foundation, you know, first and foremost here in the United States, of a vibrant capitalist economy that we began to create wealth and to create a real middle class. So it's a constant experiment that we're having to perfect and do better with over time. But socialism is a failed system that always tends to oppression, and sometimes tends to totalitarianism.
It's a great.
So, I mean, you know, the Europeans all had their social, and they're much more socialistic than we are, and look at where their economies are now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and it's a good message, and I think I would be perfectly prepared to fight the election out on that issue, and I think we need to do it. Yeah, you know, the other thing is, and I've been warning about this for some time, I've done it on the show, guys, the president moves so quickly and does so many issues that there's actually a downside to that. It makes it difficult to focus and either on, like, to take victory laps, like talking about how the border is completely under control. You know
yes,
what I mean?
Yes.
Or to focus or to message something for a week or so. So I think he's getting that, though. You know, he's been talking about prescription drug pricing, which I think there's an area we ought to talk about more, because we ought to talk about energy prices coming down.
Speaking of young voters, here's Tara Servatius with her take on what's going on with them and what it means for the midterms.
Folks, something interesting going on right now. Remember this. Years later, however it all ends, right now, we're doing better with young people, specifically young men, than anybody has in 100 years. I've got the chart up on my X feed. More young men registered Republicans now than during at any time during the last 100 years. Normally, men who are 18 to 29 are a slight majority Democrat. They're more Democrat than they're more Republican than the women, but they're just slight majority Democrat. And they get in their 30s and they flip to us. This generation is solid conservative. So we've been walking around telling ourselves we do whatever we want. Congress thinks they're hosing them as they pass the biggest spending bills ever. And we got them in a pocket. We do whatever we want. These wokes are wandering in the woods. That's not what's happening. Mark Mitchell, pollster with Rasmussen, has a dire warning. These folks are fine with socialism. They will go with a strong man to smash the system. They're not conservatives. They just went for Trump because he promised to end their pain. And if we don't end their pain, they're going to go over to the other side. Like that. Like that. And here's the problem. You see what happened yesterday on Fox News? This went viral over the last, 2 days ago, actually. This went viral. I want to play it for you. It's Nikki Haley's son, newly out of college, talking about how, look, my friends and I, we all went to these great colleges. We can't get jobs. And a stat I've never seen before. And it just froze my blood when I saw it. Do you know what the unemployment rate is for 20 to 24s right now in this country? 9%, 9.2% unemployment. The folk, they're still living in the Great Recession. You cannot leave them there for very long and tell them, compete with AI and the H-1B visa holders. Screw you. Oh, and by the way, vote for us. But that's what we're doing.
Well, a big problem is that we are seeing kids graduate with six figures in debt and not having a job to show for it. My main friend group graduated with great degrees from great schools. It's been a year and a half since graduation. Not one of them has a job. Not one.
That is former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley's son talking about how hard it is for new college grads to find work. I'm hearing it from friends, too. And data shows the unemployment rate amongst adults aged 20 to 24 is over 9%. That's the highest of any age group. Is AI to blame for sidelining Gen Z workers? I am worried about this. And one of the reasons we're doing this segment is that I think about it all the time. I read all the articles. I listen to all the podcasts. And on any day, Isabel, I could listen to something that says everything's going to be fine for young workers. AI is going to be productive. You're going to have more jobs. And then later in the day, I can listen to something else that says this is a huge problem. There are no entry-level jobs for people who are just graduating from high school or college. How do you see it in your friend group?
It's a totally reasonable fear, Dana, and I think it's been a tough week for Gen Z in the news in general when it comes to our financial stability and secure futures in our country. We know that AI is taking over a shocking number of entry-level jobs for those of us just graduating from college, and then we're surprised to know that technology has replaced those jobs. But also, as I know Fox has been covering extensively over the past few days, 80% of H-1B visas are also being given for entry-level jobs in the job market across our country. So it almost feels like the system is being rigged against young people out the gate, our financial futures. And it starts.
That's the uniparty right there. Trump needs to choose us, uniparty. Pick one. Pick one. You want to pick us? Send half of them home. I don't want to collapse the economy. Send half of them home. Got to go home. Now, I want to emphasize this, okay? Because here's what people don't know. And this is where Trump really shot himself in the foot, that we've had a very bad week this week. Very bad. And the polling reflects it. 60% support for Trump among the young generation at the height of Doge. You know what it is right now? 30. Yeah, that ain't going to work long term. Mondani types are going to walk right in. That's why AOC's running around going, oh, so many former Trump supporters love us now. She's not wrong. That is the day. They're not there yet, but that's the danger. You cannot slap young people across the face and tell them I love H-1Bs. And here's the thing. When Trump doesn't even love H-1Bs, he's done more than any other president to stop this, putting a $100,000 fee on every single individual application for every one of them. That's up from a $2,500 fee. It's going to stop. We need to send half of them home. But this right here is a crisis. And when you have the average age of a person buying a home right now is 59. Do you know what it was in the 80s? 29. Do you know what it was before Biden took office? 39. But we're about to own it. Got to get the illegals out. Got to get the H-1Bs out. Got to get these people jobs. And folks, we have the jobs. We just need to tell the foreigners to go home.
One of the major pain points for Americans, and young Americans in particular, is the rent is too damn high. And house prices are so out of reach as to be laughable for new college grads. Groceries and health care are up there too. Does Donald Trump have a plan for health care? Here's Annie Fry with more.
Quick at work right now, talking to the Democrat leadership that gets their campaigns funded by these insurance companies, and I sure hope it works. I think that meteorite that hit the Gulf of America millennia ago that wiped out the dinosaurs is Trump care, and it's going to wipe out the dinosaur that's Chuck Schumer. I think Schumer's days are numbered, as everyone else does. I think AOC will take him on in the primary and beat him like a drum. Yeah.
So that's Tim Burchett, although otherwise known as Tim. Remember that when George Santos got freed from prison because he was offered clemency by Donald Trump, and George Santos's lawyer listed out all the people they wanted to thank, and it was like, I'd like to thank Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene and Tim. And he just retweeted that and he said, like Beyonce or Madonna or something like that. But his name is Tim. Tim Burchett is the Senator Kennedy of the House.
He's becoming that for sure. Yeah, he's made a name for himself.
He's the one who stood in front of that Burger King billboard during the No Kings rally and ate a Whopper. It was like,
I didn't see that.
No Kings here. Yeah, I think he was wearing the cardboard crown.
He's the one that makes fun of that staffer that walks along beside him and tries to get him to stumble. I don't know if he's
tells him to go like back to his mom's basement and stuff like
journalist
that.
Or something. He's got to be like 21 years old.
The he funny thing is, he looks like he's a he looks I'm trying to think of who not to offend here. How I say this. He looks like a guy who would be the manager, I'll just say this, like in a paper factory. Let's go the office.
Okay. I think you've successfully achieved that.
Like, he just looks like his name is Tim. And he's super funny. And he's super quick on the helm. And I think he's done really, really great things to try to cut through the noise and message in a successful way. He's talking about Trump care in that clip. And I would like, Ryan, you to verify to the people that I have been talking specifically the parallel roads of healthcare and higher education. That everybody's always talking about, how are we going to pay for it? How are we going to pay for it? Nobody's ever talking about why it costs so darn much. And before we get to our guests here, the thing that blows my mind that has been too difficult, it's not something that's ever talked about, but it does seem like it's starting to be discussed, is that if we're only ever talking about how the taxpayer is going to pay for all of these things, and we're never talking about the actual cost, the skyrocketing, outrageous cost of healthcare, but also at the same time, in that parallel way, the cost of higher education, and then we're making it so the government will pay for whatever those places charges, why would the costs ever go down? And if the government is guaranteeing taxpayer dollars to fund things that have no free market competition to keep the prices under control, then the taxpayer dollar is going to be spent in an out of control way. And you are here on that timeline.
And that is a huge topic of discussion right now in the political world.
And it needs to be. It's really actually, we've been arguing about stupid things for so long that this is something that's gotten way out of control. Let's get to our friend Jory Murdoch, who joins us once again. Nationally syndicated columnist, Project 21 ambassador, and Fox News contributor. He's got a piece on this in the Daily Signal, which I encourage you to check out. Jory, welcome back to the show.
Any great to be with you again.
So what do you think about the healthcare system right now? Everyone's talking about, like, how are we going to pay for this? The Democrats want to continue their subsidies on the subsidy of the Unaffordable Care Act, and that just seems to be a non-starter for many fiscal Republicans. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think that, first of all,
this was supposed to be a temporary subsidy tied to COVID, and this was passed in 2021, and there are quotes from Nancy Pelosi and from Schumer and everyone else saying, hey, this is temporary, it'll just be a couple of years, and the legislation says it will run out in 2023, and then I think it got extended to end of 25. And now they're basically saying, oh, the Republicans are taking this away. Well, the Democrats proposed it. The Democrats said it would be temporary. This is not a Republican idea to cut this stuff off. So they're basically having a tantrum over something that they designed and they created and they asked for, which is kind of crazy. And I guess sometime tonight, I guess the House is going to vote, and I imagine that shutdown finally may end. Mm-hmm. But I very much like, and this is what I discuss in my piece in the Daily Signal, as Schumer shutdown comes to a halt, Trump proposal could turbocharge patient power. He had a great idea over the weekend. It's something I've been advocating. I think you and I might have talked about it a couple weeks ago. Rather than give this money to the insurance companies, to whatever degree we're going to give subsidies to people, we should give it directly to American citizens, give it directly to them as patients and consumers, and then let them go out and buy whatever insurance they like. If they like Obamacare, they can keep Obamacare. If they want to buy catastrophic plans, they can do that. If they want to be able to buy association health plans, let's say put up by the Rotary Club or by the Junior League, whatever it is, that ought to be legal and permitted. Rand Paul of Senator from Kentucky has a great idea, which is let Amazon and Google and Sam's Club and Costco and Walmart sell insurance. Now, if you're a member of, let's say, Amazon Prime, which has got, I don't know how many millions of members, I think Costco has 44 million members. Wow. If they were able to sell, let's just say that half the people bought their insurance through Costco, that's 20 million, 22 million. You walk into an insurance company, say, look, I'm representing 20 million people. Show me your prices. They go, nope, too high. And all of a sudden they say, fine, we like the volume, we'll cut the prices. And all of a sudden you'll see prices coming down. Right now, basically what it is the insurance companies sit there and somebody at the Treasury writes a big fat check to Cigna, a big fat check to Aetna, a big fat check to Blue Shield, Blue Cross, what have you. And nobody competes with them. They sit there and wait for the checks and wires to be delivered from the Treasury Department. And there's no competition there. So just like we have with food stamps or we have with Pell Grants or anything else, give the money directly to people, let the people shop and buy what they like. That competition will give people lower prices and more choice, more freedom. And that's why President Trump is pushing and why the Democrats are against it, because they don't like things like freedom and choice.
Yeah. You know, I think, Dory, this article that you have in the Daily Signal that I want people to read, a Schumer shutdown comes to a halt, Trump proposal could turbocharge patient power. This really is a very America first policy that could be put into place. And we haven't been talking. It's all of the sudden, you know, and I give credit to the Democrats who are willing to take paychecks away from all of the government workers for making this an issue that people care about once again. And then also at the same time, give credit to those Democrats for highlighting that their solution was to continue to throw more taxpayer money that they take out of your pocket to try to make you believe that it's more affordable, which is a total lie. Now Donald Trump has a platform to talk about how to actually solve the system. We spent so much time in the last, four years, five years, talking about stupid lawsuits that they're throwing at Donald Trump. Joe Biden's entire administration was a Green New Deal nonsense. None of these things that actually help American people. The conversation seems to be back where Americans would actually feel the benefit of this kind of policy should it be put in place.
Absolutely right. I mean, this is something very concrete that will be very helpful to people who don't have insurance, people who have insurance but are paying too much. And I think this is a very positive thing. And what's ironic about it is that basically what Trump is saying is, look, we're for the subsidies. We just want people to have them in their pockets rather than have it sent to the CEO of some big insurance company. And Democrats say, no, don't do that. Well, don't you want to help the poor people and help the needy people and folks who need assistance? And I think that in particular, it ought to be structured so that if you like Obamacare, you can keep it. And then let the Democrats stand up and say, no, if we do that, people are going to run away from Obamacare. Oh, so you're telling us Obamacare doesn't work, are you? You're telling us it's actually a failed program? So it really puts them in a corner, because if Obamacare is as great as they say it is, they shouldn't worry about it, because people get the money from individually and they'll run back into Obamacare. Maybe more people will run into Obamacare if it's really such a wonderful program. I doubt that will happen, but that's what people want. I guess that's their choice. But I think the Democrats understand people would rather have insurance that's closer to whatever their actual needs are, needs of themselves, their families, and loved ones. And they'll pick Obamacare, but a lot of people probably pick other things if they have the options and if they have choices. You know, one of the things that drove me crazy about Obamacare is the mandated benefits. So if you have an Obamacare plan and you're, you know, 23-24-year-old guy out of school, your Obamacare plan includes maternity benefits and fertilization benefits. And like, what is this? Why are you paying for that? Now, if you're 35 or 40, you're trying to, you know, raise kids, maybe that makes sense. But if you're right out of school, you don't need that. Why are you paying for that? You know, it's like you just want to get a basic, ordinary transportation to get to work. And someone says, well, you got the Maserati and we have the Ferrari here. Which would you like? You know, I want to buy Honda. Can I just get a Honda? No. You got to get a Ferrari or a Maserati. And this is one of the things that makes Obamacare so expensive, because every time you add, you have to have dental care. You have to have hearing care. One of the things that was included in Obamacare was pediatric dentistry. So dentistry for kids. So if you got to pay in your plan for the dental care of children you don't have, if you don't have kids. Mm-hmm. If you have kids, fine, that makes sense. If you don't have kids, or maybe you don't want to have kids, you got to pay for dental care for children you either don't have or don't even want to have. And that costs an extra, who knows how many dollars a month. And that just sends your premiums up, mandatory benefits. And so that's in every Obamacare plan, which is absurd and ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, Dory, I think that the elephant in the room that really does need to be called out specifically on a political front as this conversation continues to unfold and people start getting a little more into the wide variety of options that could be available to the American people is how the system right now is not set up to benefit the person being provided the health care. It is set up to benefit the insurance companies. The Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, guaranteed insurance companies' clients. And I don't know any company who's guaranteed that everybody has to be a client in some way, shape, or form that's going to be like, I should lower my prices. The whole system was set up upside down to not benefit the people who, you know, and it turned out it really benefited the man, the capital M man.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. And you know, let's start calling this Trump care. Maybe that's the word for this, Trump care. The whole idea that under Obamacare, you're guaranteed consumers, you're guaranteed patients. Imagine, you know, you as a broadcaster, me as a broadcaster, and also as a writer. If we're guaranteed, okay, you know, every time you talk in a microphone, there'll be 500,000 people listening. Or every time I write an op-ed, I'll have, you know, a million people read it. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we don't operate in that situation. We operate in a situation where we have to compete. We got to be interesting. We got to be timely. We got to be easy to find on the dial for you, and you know, in websites people can track down easily for me. But you know, in the world of the left, you know, rather than let people compete and actually have to create a product, a service, a broadcast, op-ed pieces that people like and want, we'll just give this to you. You're guaranteed. You don't have to do anything. So if you're guaranteed, why knock yourself out? Why be innovative? Why be clever? Why come up with anything new or interesting if you have yourself basically a captive audience, which is what Obamacare is to a large degree.
Our YouTube live chat poll for today, we're going to have, it's a little fill in the blank action for you. I voted for Trump and fill in the blank. He's exceeded my expectations. He's met my expectations. He's failed my expectations, or I didn't vote for Trump. Josh said, fantastical, still loving Trump, if admittedly a little concerned about the increasing market intervention. So a thoughtful but positive review there. Crystal said, to be honest, I hoped for, expected more, but I am okay with things accomplished so far. And like that, this administration is making great efforts to be civil and work with the opposition. I think that's a great reaction as well. Jack said, I voted exceeded expectations. Never thought the BBB would pass. Democrats are so tedious, they would spite their nose to save their face. Completely bonkers. And then Doug, simply failed expectations.
Thank you for listening to Red Meat, a collection of conservative audio from Odyssey's talk stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in. Listen wherever you get podcasts and smash that subscribe button.